Hello and welcome to This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Steger. I'm joined as ever by Ian Wenick. And for this, a very special episode by Alec Rich. Ian, Alec, how you doing?
Great. Happy to be here.
Doing fantastic. We're going to get into why very shortly.
Yeah, well, I think this is the why, which is this is a, like every episode special. Of course it is. And every week is special here at Citywire RAA. But this last week's been particularly special because we have produced our annual magnum opus. Can you have an annual magnum opus? No. You just get one.
Yeah, you get one. You get one for your whole life.
Well, then it doesn't work, does it? But whatever it is, it's the biggest piece of work that we produce on an annual basis. And it is our 50 Growers Across America report. For those of you who don't know, Ian, what is 50 Growers Across America?
So 50 Growers is our massive team effort project in which we use ADV data sourced through Fintrix to, we take a firm's percentage of AUM growth, raw EM growth, and employee headcount growth year over year, and we combine the three of those into a single number called the growth factor. Then we try to identify the three fastest growing RAs in each state based on those growth factor numbers. We reach out to all of them, and then we put together a massive, massive clickable graphics packet with mini profiles of every firm that tops the list, along with plenty of mentions of the runners-up as well.
Okay, yeah. So effectively, across the 50 firms, I would say it's three, but there's not always three firms because some firms, some states don't have enough firms that are growing fast enough to be included, but it nets out, this is the sixth year we've done it, it nets out somewhere between 130 and, 100, and at the higher end, 150 firms that are growing fast across the 50 states of America based on that score. We should also say on the data side of it, we screen for various other things before we even get to that growth score. So you have to be a financial planning focused firm, you need to be an independent RAA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are some other sort of screens and criteria that we look at to narrow down that universe. We should also make the point that because we do it on a state-by-state basis, there might be firms growing faster in certain states not included in it, but because they're in a state where there are lots and lots of fast-growing firms, it's only the three fastest that get in there, whereas if you're in a state where there are fewer fast-growing firms, you know, you might be number one in that state, but that wouldn't have cut it in a more competitive state. But I don't know why we're highlighting a flaw or a downside to the report. The upside of the report is what it gives is a great snapshot across the country rather than just focusing on, say, for example, New York City. And, you know, there's enough problems with the media being too New York centric as it is. We can all agree with that, right? We say, sipping tea in a New York studio. Excellent. Okay. And Ian, I suppose, what else should we say about the fact that it's all kind of based just on this growth score? Because I think there are a lot of lists out there from publications. And I like to think what marks this out is that quantitative process, that there's no other kind of subjective judgment here.
So first I would say, one, you are the only person sipping tea here in the middle of the afternoon, living up to your own stereotypes. And then two, what I would say is, yes, I think that
We'll come back to that. Yeah. Okay. Carry on.
This might be my last episode. Using the growth factor, I love that because it's objective. There's no submission process, although several confused readers often email us after the fact asking, how can we submit? And the answer is, you can't. So I like that it's all sourced by the data. And it means that, you know, looking at these firms, it's not an endorsement or a criticism. The numbers are the numbers. And that's what I like about it the most.
Yeah. Same. Obviously, it's good, isn't it? Because it's not, yeah. There's not a panel of experts. There's no nominees and nominations from people who might be best friends with someone that they nominate. There's no kind of, you can't lobby it. The numbers are the numbers. If you want to be in next year, grow faster, you know, or move to a less competitive state. I suppose as well, we should say that as well as getting, feedback from people who aren't included in the report, sometimes we don't always have the best of relationships with people who are included in the report because they feel like the way we might have written about them isn't hugely flattering, or they didn't want that attention or something, you know, because the whole point is you can't choose to be in it or not be in it. It's just a product of the numbers. And I suppose we've had a, at least one or two contretemps with, if I've used that phrase correctly, we've got Latin and French in this, with those firms who haven't necessarily appreciated our write-up, if you know what I'm referring to, Ian.
Of course I do. I'm here looking at you. But what I'm saying is that, you know, looking out just on a macro level, I think this would make it an act of journalism that we're going out and finding these firms. They're not coming to us. And yeah, sometimes that means you're printing something or identifying a firm that wants to fly under the radar or doesn't want to be identified. And, you know, this project, that just comes part and parcel with it. The numbers are the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. So in this year's report, there are, I think, 146 firms, if that's correct.
Yes, your math is right.
And what can we say about this year's report? As we've mentioned, we've done now six of these. First one was in 2020. The project was spearheaded, fathered, we could say, by our erstwhile colleague, Alex Rosenberg. We did indeed ask him to come back to be on this podcast, but he said he wouldn't be allowed to. So this is a shout out to Alex and his work there. But what's different about this report, or what can we take from this year's report that's sort of interesting and relevant?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, you see a decent amount of shuffling with some of the institutionally backed names. Some firms, you know, it's kind of surprising that they've dropped off entirely. So we look at Florida, I was shocked. Corient, the wealth management division of asset manager CI Financial, yeah, they're not on the list this year. They were number one in 24, and I was kind of shocked by it. But then you think it kind of makes sense, given that that was a company that had a clear, defined slowdown in acquisition activity, and that was what drove a lot of their growth. At the same time, we found that a lot of firms that have well-known, publicized, organic growth strategies, a lot of times through systematized sources of referrals, have held strong. Creative Planning, that is a very good example.
So, Alec, fair to say, though, that it's not just the kind of usual suspects in this report. I think that's kind of one of its strengths, is yes, there are those kind of quasi-household, at least in this household, names like your Cerity Partners, like your Creative Plannings, that maybe have very well-entrenched referral networks, that maybe do have a lot of money for M&A, but that's by no means the only kind of firms that this report captures.
That's right. Yeah, we were able to find that there were 34 firms actually that, you know, had AUMs under $1 billion from, you know, our calculations by the end of 2024. And so, you know, that kind of ran the gamut of, you know, certain, you know, smaller states where you might expect to find, you know, smaller AUM firms, but also in some of the larger ones as well, which kind of I think is a testament to, you know, the, you know, strength of kind of the methodology of what you guys were speaking to.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, isn't it? Because obviously, on the one hand, smaller firms, you know, easier perhaps to grow on a percentage base because you're coming from a lower level. But that's the whole point of the way the growth factor is calculated, that it actually takes in absolute asset growth as well as just percentage growth and looks at employee headcount growth. So it's not just a case of tons of small firms can, you know, double their assets more easily than a really large firm can. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the ways in which firms have grown, because as part of this project, not only do we crunch the numbers, but the two of you, as well as our colleagues, Sam Bojarski and Andrew Forsch, go out and speak to as many of these firms as possible, to talk to their CEOs, COOs, etc., about how they have grown. So from those conversations and what we wrote up, what are some of the key sort of ways in which firms are growing across America? Ian, do you want to kick us off?
I mean, like, obviously, mergers and acquisitions plays a massive role. So we talked about Florida. Our fastest grower in Florida was Dakota Wealth Management, which completed...
Peter Raimondi?
Yes, Peter Raimondi. Good memory. So yeah, Peter Raimondi's firm, they have two rounds of backing from Emigrant Partners. They did a follow-on transaction relatively recently. And yeah, like Peter was telling me that they added billions of assets from a couple of deals just in a matter of months, and they have more lined up. So it makes sense that if you have a couple of sizable transformative acquisitions, that's going to jump your percentage of AUM way up. Then we talk a little bit, I'll move briefly on to organic growth. A good example would be, we talk about kind of a steady, predictable flow of new clients. Integrated Partners, which has had various positions on our list in Massachusetts over the years. This is, I believe, their second time finishing first. They have grown historically, one, through advisor recruitment, but two, they have these affiliations and alliances with accounting firms that send clients over. And so you have, again, a steady, predictable stream of clients from businesses that aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, so M&A, obviously good for inorganic growth. I suppose advisor recruitment, which you'd also, would you bracket that as inorganic growth as well?
I would, because you know a lot of times to get those advisors over, you're paying them some sort of bonus. There's some sort of compensation package. Anything that requires a quote-unquote deal to be made, I'm going to classify as inorganic growth.
Okay, then on the organic side, yeah, you mentioned referrals. So yeah, obviously referrals from sort of professional networks or sort of ties to other companies is obviously clearly really good. The other one that I think we saw quite commonly was firms mentioning being members of those, the two very lucrative custodial referral networks, so Fidelity and Schwab. I also saw a few mentions, I think at least two of referrals from David or is it just Dave?
Dave Ramsey.
Just Dave, call me Dave Ramsey, which was interesting. And then Alec, on the smaller side though, obviously referrals can be a big part of, on the sort of smaller firm end of things, referrals can be a big part of that. But you also spotted a kind of interesting trend around kind of knowledge or sort of saturation of hyper-local markets, shall we say?
Yeah, definitely in certain markets like Louisiana, for example, where you know True Wealth Advisors was our fastest grower there. You know, I spoke to them and it's really interesting how they're able to kind of really have that long running, you know, local influence. And, you know, I think it you've seen how it's, you know, it is harder for some of the larger, you know, maybe household names that we cover often to break into a market like New Orleans, just because there is, you know, so much kind of local loyalty. And that was something that I spoke with them about a fair bit. And also wanted to emphasize kind of on the kind of referral front as well. You know, something I noticed in a lot of these, you know, among some of these smaller firms or just in other states overall was, you know, the concentration in certain industries, you know, in Louisiana, for example, that was petrochemical industry, but, you know, in North Carolina, there's especially in the Charlotte metro area, there's a lot of working with medical professionals and suppliers and things like that. And in Wyoming, it's a lot with other kinds of oil and natural gas and things like that. So I think being able to pull, you know, clients from those sectors and really doubling down on centers of influence was something that I noticed a lot.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? Is that, you know, local knowledge, specific knowledge of your audience, or I suppose segmenting by sector is clearly really smart. And that's really interesting. A couple of other things that I seem to remember noticing a lot of, which maybe you guys could both chime in on, was people really emphasizing a lot of client communication and sort of how that can really help drive further referrals from their own client base. And dare we say this without sounding too self-important, media exposure. These were another couple of things I just seem to remember seeing often cited by firms.
I was very afraid you were going to say you noticed some typos in there and my heart skipped a beat.
If I did, I certainly wouldn't choose this format in which to bring it up. No, fingers crossed, we'll, you know, through the various ongoing rounds of editing, I think we're in the clear there. Excellent. I suppose one thing, Ian, that we haven't talked about, and I didn't ask you about before, so I'm putting you on the spot, but it's by no means the first time, is that sometimes I think that this list can serve as a bit of a shopping list for either RIAs that are already acquisitive themselves, or indeed the much discussed sort of PE backers and strategic acquirers looking to perhaps get a foothold in this market. And one thing I feel like I noticed, although I haven't done the kind of maths, for want of a better phrase, to check it, is that I felt like in this year's report, more of the firms that we wrote about, we mentioned they had some form of minority backing already. So whereas perhaps if we cast our mind back to 2020, 2021, when we first wrote this list, there might have been a lot of sort of fruit there to be picked by acquisitive readers. Do you think that's less the case now?
Yeah, you know, it's like going through the dollar boxes at a baseball card show on the last day. Everything good is pretty much, or a lot of the good stuff is already gone. And the stuff that still that looks good is probably priced way too high. So let me give you a good example coming off the back of that analogy, and that's Moneta Group, which is our fastest grower in Missouri this year. Moneta Group has had their phones ringing off the hooks from private equity firms for years. But they're a firm that has consciously made a choice to say, we're not going to sell to PE. We are going to keep our equity in-house. We are going to have a competitive partnership model where the equity gets rebalanced on a regular basis, which incentivizes younger advisors to go out and drive new business, which I think is a very interesting incentive structure. On top of that, they also do their own inorganic growth, trying to find advisors who want to join them and not have their businesses sold to a private equity firm within a year of selling their company. So it creates a sort of like a magnet effect where you bring in like-minded advisors. So the thing is that the firms like Moneta that have made a conscious choice, like they're used to it, but it wouldn't shock me if there are some of these firms out there that we've identified for the first time that will get unwanted PE or institutional investor attention.
Or wanted. We don't know. They might, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to have someone knock on your door and offer to buy your business. I wouldn't say no, probably, if I had a business. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think another one is, to your point, Coldstream spring to mind, don't they, as another firm. I forget the state. Do you have the state to hand, Ali?
Washington.
Look at that. Such a pro. They've also eschewed any sort of PE backing, correct?
That's right. And also, I mean, there's tons of others too. You know, Bragg Financial in North Carolina comes to mind. You know, I spoke to them and they said, you know, they've fielded tons of inquiries from aggregators, but they're just, you know, not interested. And, you know, they feel like being able to take a long range focus, you know, to serve their clients is the right thing for them. You know, obviously those calculuses can always change over time, but, you know, for now, you know, I think what we've shown is you don't necessarily have to be, you know, backed by a private equity firm or someone else to or kind of have outside capital in order to see growth.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think there might be some smaller firms that we haven't picked up on there who don't have backing, whether that's a conscious choice or not. We don't know. I suppose, look, if you get inundated with calls and you don't like it, sorry. If you do sell and you want to share some sort of, you know, finder's fee with us, ethics preclude us from accepting that, but just something to think about. Fantastic. Well, look, I think, you know, we've covered an awful lot of ground there. It was a huge amount of work over sort of months from the initial data crunching and all those various tabs on an Excel sheet that in the past has, I know, crashed your laptop, Ian, through to, you know, winnowing that list down and then divvying it up to everyone and getting out and speaking to as many of these 140X firms as we could. So this almost rounds it off, although we do have a few follow-up pieces coming from it, Ian. Could you trail those for us?
Yeah, a couple of pieces coming. We're going to be profiling the fastest growing firms under that $1 billion threshold. I'm excited about that one. We'll also be looking at firms that have, like the Creative Plannings of the world, that have gotten on this list and stayed on there, repeat honorees. And then we're also going to be looking at the 20 biggest firms on the list, which the Creatives, the Mariners, the Focus Partners Wealth of the world.
Yeah, there's absolute giants and sort of what they're doing. Yeah, I think on the sort of consistency list, yeah, we've got a bit of work to do there, going back through all six reports. But I think hopefully by next week, we will have some kind of list of any firms who've been on all of them and then some who've been on five and four, etc. A sort of a new layer of consistent growers. And then we might, Ian, even do some kind of list of any firm that we know not to have PE backing. Brilliant. Well, look out for all of those things. But otherwise, Ian, thank you very much indeed. Before you go, any sort of baseball stories for us? Any elongated similes that you want to share?
No, I already used my best one.
How did that trading card event go?
Good. I had a nice 50% profit margin. So I'm running at my business at RIA levels.
Fantastic. Well, maybe you'll get some phone calls. Alec, anything else from you? Any good film recommendations before we leave? I feel I always put you on the spot for this.
Oh, man. What have I seen recently? I saw the new Fantastic Four the other day. It was okay. I'd say Superman's better, but not a plug for DC, but, you know.
Naked Gun, very good. Good, right in the spirit of the original.
I need to see that. I've not yet.
Excellent. Well, look, on that incredibly relevant and serious note, we'll leave it there, and we'll be back again next week for another episode of This Week in Wealth.